It's got a build.
Yeah, I know, right? You...
Try not to laugh.
Too humble. There it is. Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to say anything until it started, and I couldn't help it. I looked at you, and the look in your eyes, you're like, oh my gosh, you played this track right now. Yes, I did. I think we're just giddy about the finals for tomorrow.
We are.
It's been too long. It's been too long.
Yeah, what is going on? A week? No basketball.
It was like 10 days just about.
It was, yeah, this is crazy. Everybody should be healthy. Should be. Kyrie.
You know what didn't last a week? Episodes of the Long 2 podcast brought to you by Nylon Calculus.
There it is.
As we promised, we said last Thursday we'd be back on Wednesday for a finals preview,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
We're here.
Hey, it's fresh. It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow night. It's Thursday night right now. What's today's date?
The third?
It's Wednesday night. I'm sorry. It's Wednesday night the 3rd. You'll get this probably Thursday morning the 4th. This is the Long 2 podcast. My name is Matt Deanna. He is
Steve Harney.
I'm going to let this ride out for a minute.
Let's do it.
So there's a musical theme going on today, and hopefully the editor at Nylon Calculus, Eon, I call that man Eon.
That's all right.
It's been Eon since I spoke, apparently. Ian Levy, our wonderful editor at Nylon Calculus, he's in charge of the fan-sided post for HP Basketball this week, and I don't want to give too much away, but it has to do a lot with music in the finals, so...
There'll be
a few tracks we're going to lace this podcast with. So
I like it.
Let's consider this my contribution to that post, hopefully.
Let's do it.
All right. So where do you want to start? How do you want to do this? I've got a few ideas. I got a hypothesis, but I don't want to skew things too much here.
Let's just get right into it. Let's compare these teams. Let's take as many different angles as we can.
Okay.
And figure out how the Warriors are going to win and... Or how the Cavs are going to win.
Okay. One of the things I'm most interested in at this point is how these two teams are actually going to guard each other. Because I don't want to tell you my working theory, because I don't want to skew this, because you're kind of my test subject for this, I suppose. Because I've got an idea about what it comes down to, and we'll see by the end of this if it holds true. But do you want to look at lineups first, or do you want to talk about stats or something else?
Let's go with lineups.
Okay, so here's the thing. When it comes to lineups, I went to NBA.com, specifically stats.NBA.com. Wonderful site. You're able to pull lineup data. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at five-man squads, specifically during the playoffs, right? Most use five-man squads. So you want to start with Cleveland or Golden State?
Let's go with Cleveland first.
Okay. What I want to do is let's look at these lineups and figure out on defense how the opponent is actually going to guard this lineup.
I like
it. Like player by player.
Yep.
So Cleveland's most used lineup in the playoffs has been Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Timofey Mozgov, Amon Shumpert, and Tristan Thompson. Their starting lineup, basically.
Okay.
Point, right? So I ask you this, Steve Harney. How does Golden State guard that lineup? Like, who do they put on who? Who guards Kyrie, for example?
That's going to depend a lot on Kyrie's health. As of right now, he's not all the way healthy.
Even after the rest?
Yeah, he's not practicing in full. Now, it could be a play. It could be, a little ploy used. But from what you can see is when he's not healthy, he's amazing in very small bursts. And then towards the end of the game, he's pretty much useless. How we're going to guard Kyrie. I would say we could put, depending on his health, I would go with a few different players. I mean, you could go Curry. I don't think that's the best matchup. Even bringing Livingston off the bench may be a decent matchup. Klay Thompson definitely has the height to disrupt some things.
So the key here is probably who guards LeBron. The next person will guard Curry, right?
Right.
So who do you think guards LeBron?
I think they go... LeBron's going to get his in this series. I don't think there's anybody that can really guard him, but I think they can throw a ton of players at him, which has been the weakness thus far with, teams playing against Cleveland. They've typically only had one person, hoping they had two people. I think this one, you can throw Harrison Barnes. You could throw Draymond Green. You can throw Iguodala. You could even throw Livingston because he's a tall guy. He's not very big, so he's going to get beat down the post, but he's just another body. You can bring people in to guard I was, you know, Barbosa's going to give up way too much hype.
No, that can't happen.
It's not going to happen. But I think they guard LeBron by committee, and in which gives them some extra fouls. You know, they can definitely handle it that way. I think they're going to let LeBron, not let him, but allow him more to do his thing.
Okay.
And say,
like, let him get his.
You're going to get yours, but your team needs to beat us.
It's a dangerous strategy, probably, but it might be the only thing they can do. So I think they go Barnes to start the game, probably. Barnes is bigger than I think we give him credit for. Because he's standing next to guys that typically make him look smaller than he is. But he's bigger and stronger than we typically realize. I'll be curious, because I think LeBron's decision-making with the ball is going to partially be predicated on who guards him and who they put in the pick and roll.
Right.
So the beauty of this Warriors defense is, as long as it's not Bogut or Curry that they're doing a pick and roll with, that they can switch to Thompson, they can switch to Green, and it's a completely different scheme at that point, but they can still handle it. Green and Barnes, I think, need to be the two primary defenders on
Absolutely.
Him. Even if they... I mean, there's... Do you even double-team him, honestly? Like, if you're going off to let LeBron get his, maybe you just go single coverage so that way you have enough bodies to still guard everyone else.
I think LeBron is... LeBron's fantastic when he's double-teamed. He's just used to it. So, I mean, double-team and triple-team is just another day for him. That's another game. What I think Golden State can do by having all these bodies to throw at LeBron is they can be physical. And when LeBron gets pushed around, he tends to start he tends to start settling for that jump shot, which is what you want. That's how you beat LeBron. You make him a shooter.
That's what the Spurs did last year.
Exactly. You beat him up down low, force him outside, which, I mean, if you're going to take anything from him, if he's going to beat you shooting fadeaway jumpers and three-pointers, hey, we did what we could. He's just, you know, it's one of those nights. He's not going to win a series that way. I don't think he's consistent enough to do that.
Well, he shot about 12% from three-point land during the playoffs. I mean, I think he's generally shot about 40% overall, fairly weak percentage, especially for him. This dude had improved his shooting percentages almost every season since his rookie year, to the point where he was almost shooting about 60% as a wing player last season with the Heat. That is insane. So his shooting percentages are down this year for sure. He's carried a bigger load. I think you start him with Barnes on him. Because
like
if you don't, and if you go Green, the issue becomes you got to put Barnes probably on Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
He can handle that because Thompson isn't an offensive weapon. However, I would prefer Green boxing out Thompson versus Barnes trying to box out Tristan Thompson, because that's going to be the real issue.
Yeah, I think you got to put the most tenacious defender on the Warriors against the person who is that hustle type scrapper for the Cavs, and that's exactly what Thompson is.
And then also, if you have Green on Thompson, it frees him up to roam a little bit.
It does.
Obviously, he's got to find him as soon as the shot goes up, but he can rove around a little bit and maybe be a little more dangerous. So I think when you've got the Cavs starting lineup, which is their most used at this point, so you've got the Kyrie, LeBron, Mozgov, Shumpert, Thompson lineup, I think you go Harrison Barnes on LeBron. You go Klay Thompson on Kyrie Irving.
I like it.
You go Draymond Green on Tristan Thompson. You put, obviously, Bogut on Mozgov. And then you more or less hide Curry on Shumpert. You can probably swap Curry and Thompson a little bit, depending. Mm-hmm. But I'd want Klay Thompson on Kyrie just because he's such a threat, even injured at this point. I think he's a better defender at this
point. And
he's a more physical defender.
He's going to sit there and force Kyrie into some physical, you know, shots and things like that, which is exactly what you need to do. If Kyrie's healthy, but he's not quite healthy, and he takes a bad fall off a good, strong foul, then, hey, that's a plus. That's a positive. That's what you want. Last thing you want to do is, you know, he's a bigger body than Curry. You don't want Curry to take a big hit, a good collision, and then be out for, you know, a spell.
The nice thing with this is by more or less hiding Curry on Shumpert, is a spot-up shooter in this type of lineup, so he's going to be patrolling the wings mm-hmm. and the corners, waiting for that LeBron or Kyrie kickout, yep. which doesn't put a lot of defensive burden on Curry. No. Curry's been better than he's been in previous seasons. To call him a great defender is massively inflated, I think, at this point.
He's still a little guy. I mean, 6'3", 180 pounds, but he's got fast hands, he's got good instincts, and you know what? Where I think he excels on defense is when he guards a player that reminds him of himself. A spot-up kind of... Mm-hmm. I mean, he's much more than a spot-up shooter, but, you know, shooter tendencies kind of are something other shooters understand. Absolutely. So he knows when he's going to fall mm-hmm. down to the baseline, he's going to roll up top, you know, he's going to jump in that lane. And those quick hands, he gets some steals.
So, disagree with me if you want, but I think this is an overall positive for the Warriors when it comes to these matchups, that the Cavs aren't winning those matchups like that, right?
No.
Based on that Cavs lineup.
Absolutely.
Now, the second most used Cleveland lineup in the playoffs is LeBron, Shumpert, and Thompson, so those same three.
Mm-hmm.
You throw JR in the mix, and you throw Matthew Dellavedova, those five. So you go small. You switch Thompson over to the center. You have LeBron at a nominal stretch four, and then you've got essentially 3 3-point shooters. Shout out to Josh Planos, wrote an excellent article on Matthew Dellavedova in the postseason for the Washington Post this week. I may or may not have made a chart for him. That's why I'm shouting him out. But no, in general, it was a good article. But so that's a completely different lineup, obviously. The height disappears. LeBron's role changes. You add two new spot-up three-point shooters to the mix. How do the Warriors defend that lineup?
I think they go – they're going to have to go to their smaller lineup. I think, mm-hmm. You know, the typical lineup. I think you saw that lineup a lot with against the Rockets.
Yeah.
They run well off of it. I think the Warriors are deep enough in their mid-range size, not their big man, but, those, you know, you got your Iguodala, Livingston, you know, Green can guard all, Barnes can guard all five. You have so many people that can guard so many different positions. Barbosa can guard those positions. You know, I think they're covered no matter which lineup Cleveland throws out.
So here's the interesting thing.
Devin Adobe doesn't scare me on offense.
No.
He's a hustle player.
Funny you mentioned that. So that first Cavs lineup, that starting mm-hmm. lineup, is a defensive rating of 95.9, right? So points per 100 possessions. This lineup, so their reserve lineup or their secondary mm-hmm. lineup, is an 85.5 on defense. So that's a 10-point drop per 100 possessions in defensive rating. So that's that Dellavedova, J.R. Smith factor on defense, apparently. But no, whatever that is, that's pretty interesting. Obviously, small sample sizes. Obviously, they're playing against other combinations of bench units. Here's the thing. Even if it's the Warriors starting lineup, you could still put Bogut on Tristan Thompson. Quite frankly, if you do that, it gets a little dicey because they'll probably put Thompson in some pick and rolls, but the offensive rebounding is virtually wiped out because you've got Bogut on him, right? Draymond Green, then, that's when he guards LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
If they go small, the Warriors don't even have to change because then they still have Barnes and Thompson to deal with Kyrie and J.R. Smith.
Yeah.
And then you put... you put Steph Curry on Dellavedova, and you've got the same thing again. So that's the thing with this Warrior, with both of these Cavs lineup, these most used Cavs lineup, their smaller three-point gunner lineup or their normal starting lineup, the Warriors match
easily,
up
they don't
fairly
have to
well.
Change much. They no. don't have to change much. And let's not forget, they have David Lee sitting on the bench. They
yeah.
have Spites, whatever his name is, sitting
on the
bench.
Is he healthy, though? I thought he was hurt.
Who, Maurice?
Yeah, Mos Bates.
Well, he's questionable for game one. He's got a calf injury. Who knows?
Okay.
I mean, he's there, but the amount of minutes he plays, yeah, it could be negligible. You know, it is. So they have people. I mean, they're deep.
They're very,
very
deep.
So, and they're all good size. They can all play these different positions. I think the Cavs don't have a lineup they could throw out there where they're like, what are we doing? Draymond Green did a phenomenal job when he was guarding Dwight Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me that Mozgov is, you know, going to play
yeah.
tougher than, you know, Dwight Howard now? I think the matchups going this way definitely sit on the Warriors.
So here's another interesting thing. When you look at the percent, so the amount of those lineup shots that are two-pointers versus three-pointers, right?
Okay.
That Cavs starting lineup, the most used lineup, 75% of their shots have been two-pointers, right? Interesting. Only a quarter of their shots are actually threes. That second most used lineup drops down to 65% of their shots are two-pointers, so 35% are three-pointers in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Interesting because it starts to skew, right? If the Cavs really want to get interesting, out of their most used lineups in the offseason so far, where a majority of their shots are actually coming from three, it's a funky lineup, but it's Kyrie, James Jones, Shumpert, Smith, and Tristan Thompson. So LeBron's not even in that lineup. It's like an ultimate Gunners lineup. That would be some kind of drastic measures type stuff, or that's that like early fourth quarter when LeBron's sitting lineup. If you just want to jack threes, right, that's who you go with. That's the only time where they're, you know, significantly changing how they play offense.
I think the Cavs, if they go with that lineup, it's a do or die. Mm-hmm. With the way the Warriors can score, predicated off of their defense. I mean, multiple stops, multiple buckets. I mean, they're great at that. Getting on a run, those bursts. I mean, they're quick, but all of a sudden, you know, they're, wow, we just went on a 14-2 run like that. You know, I mean, just you know, within minutes.
And again, to your point from before, the Warriors are so deep and they've got enough backup defenders like Livingston and Iggy that if the Cavs go nuclear with a three-point gunning lineup like this while LeBron's resting, they've got Iggy and Livingston to play with these guys as well. Then every one of these lineups that I've mentioned involve Shumpert and Thompson, who have been great. I think overall they've been like a plus 25 when they've been on the court during the playoffs. They can't be in every lineup all game, mm-hmm, though. So,
I mean, you could take Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, and I'm talking just from a pure defensive kind of matchup. You take the two, you know, I guess, quote-unquote, best players on their team, at least on the offensive end. Now, I'm leaving Draymond Green in there, and I think he's he's easily one of the top players on this team. But you take Steph Curry and Klay Thompson out, and the Warriors still match up great. You take out LeBron James and Kyrie Irving on the, you know, in the Cavs, they don't even sniff the playoffs. Yeah. You know what I mean? The Warriors aren't phenomenal and they're not doing what they're doing, but I mean, you could take those guys out and they're still a tough defensive team. And I think this is a huge hurdle that the Cavs are gonna have to get over. And you know what, the Cavs haven't played against a team that plays this type of defense. And we're not even getting into the offense part
the
yet.
Bulls, if they were the Bulls from a season ago, they would have been that defense.
Right. But,
so that lineup I was talking about, that all-gunner lineup with no LeBron, interesting thing about that lineup has the greatest point differential, positive net differential between offensive rating and defensive rating. They're only giving up 89. It's an 89 defensive rating and a 115 on offense. So that's a good 25-point swing comparing offense to defense with that no LeBron all-gunner lineup. But that's not a high usage lineup either. That's a little novelty while LeBron's resting thing. Right. If that is, and again, I think that can still be defended. Warriors defense is just that strong.
Yep. You're not gonna have James, you know, and some of the numbers can get skewed by some, you know, a few games where, like, what James Jones was. I mean, he was rocking three-pointers in, what, game, like, three or four?
Him and J.R., yeah.
Yeah, and J.R. Smith was shooting over 60% in that series or something like that. That doesn't make sense. That guy hasn't shot 60% over from three.
Well, there's obviously regression to the mean. As a Knicks fan, I've seen both sides of the J.R. Smith coin. I've seen the regression to the mean. Normally, after the huge games, there's a huge drop-off.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love seeing. I also, as a Knicks fan, love seeing J.R. Smith thrive at this point. It's very nice to see. But can that be sustainable if your offense and your success is predicated on LeBron and Kyrie driving into a clog lane and kicking out to them to be open? It's a dangerous game to be playing, to be relying on them.
And big time.
The elephant in the room is, damn, I wish Kevin Love was here.
Yeah.
Because that becomes just an absolute weapon.
Well, I think Kevin Love adds a dimension to their offense that all of a sudden starts to create problems for any team defending them. The Warriors, I think, they still have a decent mix to stay with them, but that just opens everything up so much. You're just like, okay. And frankly, that's what you need. You need that extra dimension to really win a championship.
Absolutely.
You know?
So while we're still on the Cavs lineup, can I break down some stats for you?
Do it. That's what you're here for.
I've got to do it to music, though, keeping up tonight's theme, right?
Here we go. Oh my.
Notice.
This is great.
Notice the overall beat and the cadence to this whole thing. I'm gonna slow my voice down a little bit. I'm gonna try to vibe with the track a little bit. Before I get into these statistics, are you familiar with what song this is?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. Then you obviously know it's Raekwon the Chef.
Uh-huh.
It's Heaven or Hell. There's a theme, there's a reason why I picked this song. You'll see as I rattle off some of these stats. So in the regular season, the Cavs were third overall on offense. They were 18th overall on defense. So net ratings, right? Third and 18th. They had the eighth best. They were the eighth best shooting team, right? They were actually the fourth best in true shooting percentage. So they were a very good offensive team. Again, defensive, they were 18th overall. They were 20th in defensive effective field goal percentage. And they gave up the 10th lowest opponent three-point percentage. So they were in the bottom third in the league in a good way in opponent three-point percentage. But they were 25th in pace. Hence the beat of the song. And it's Heaven or Hell for a reason. Because they were great on offense. That was that heavenly part.
Yep.
And the defense was very suspect, right? Now, people will counter that our seven listeners will yell into their devices right now that the Cavs had the best defense in the playoffs. And they have, statistically.
They haven't played a good offensive team yet.
It's like it's a ventriloquist act. Exactly.
They have not even come close.
So, might be a little skewed there in terms of their defensive
ranking.
They have played, their defense has been a lot better. They've trended towards the heaven part of this song and away from the hell part. But to call it the best defense in the playoffs seems a little sketchy at this point.
Chicago's offense was broken going into that series. And they still gave them problems. And that was the best offense they faced until now, obviously. I mean, the Warriors are a different breed on offense. So many weapons coming off the bench. On the court, they're starting five. I mean, Curry's a freak. You name it. I mean, and Klay Thompson is just itching to get back to his status quo. Maybe the need of the temple woke him up. So you never know. Because if he's firing on all cylinders and the rest of the team is firing on all cylinders, I mean, there is not an offense like that. There hasn't been an offense like that in quite a while, actually.
All right, well, since you brought this up, why don't we talk about the Warriors lineup?
Let's do it.
So when we talk about the Warriors lineup, how are the Cavs going to match up with this lineup? So the overall most used lineup for the Golden State Warriors in the postseason has been their starting lineup, which is Barnes, Bogut, Curry, Green, and Thompson. Right?
Mm-hmm.
A 102 offensive rating, a 91 defensive rating. It's an 11-point swing. That's really impressive.
Yeah.
So, first things first, who do you put on Curry?
You know, I think... Well, see, it's immediately a lot of people would jump to Kyrie, but Kyrie plays not good defense. he is a horrible defensive player right now. He's not saying he can't play defense, but right now he tends to not play very strong defense.
Well, overall, he's not known as a great defender.
No.
I think that's fair.
And somebody who moves off the ball as well as Curry, and I mean, if you're putting somebody whose health is kind of up in the air, you don't want him getting blasted by all those screens that Curry runs people through. And Curry's very smart. He'll see that, and he'll be like, all right, I'm taking you down low, and I'm getting you hammered by somebody's screens. I would honestly say, in the game scenarios, LeBron will be on him.
Okay, kind of like Tony Parker 2 years ago in the finals, right, when LeBron D'd him up.
Other than that,
which is not sustainable over the course of a game.
Yeah,
he can't. Putting him on Curry, you can't do that all game.
You can't do that. I think it's going to be a mixture of Dellavedova and, I mean, maybe Shumpert.
I think Shumpert gets the bulk of these possessions.
You think?
Yeah. So when you compare starting lineups to starting lineups, assuming Dellavedova is not in the starting lineup, so at the tip, the Cavs lineup.
Shumpert's in.
Shumpert, right? So it's most likely going to be Shumpert. You want to know something interesting?
Hmm.
Justin Willard, who is at Across the Court on Twitter, right?
Right.
Today he wrote an article for Nylon Calculus where he took the Sport View camera tracking data and broke out detailed play-by-play logs and looked at who has guarded Steph Curry the best in the postseason. You want to guess who?
Guarded Steph
Curry. Talk about a loaded question.
That is a loaded question. I don't know. Which series?
I'll give you a hint. He has scored over 50 points in a game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the beard?
No.
Or over 50 points in a game?
In a game. Not in the playoffs, but this season he scored over 50 points in a game.
Oh, I got it.
Corey Brewer.
Really?
Corey Brewer has guarded Steph Curry the best so far this year when you start to break out as the primary defender, points per possession. So I think, and I pose this question to Justin, I don't think he's run enough of the statistics yet to get an answer on this yet. No fault of his. It's an awesome article. You should pause this and read it right now. But what Cleveland defender is most similar to Corey Brewer then, if Corey Brewer's doing the best job? Is there one?
No. I mean, Shumpert is not comparable to Corey Brewer. I mean, their games are alike, you know, and similar in some ways. Their build, you know, 6'5", 200-pound kind of guy, so smaller, faster kind of person. But I don't...
It's not Dellavedova.
Well, no. The reason I give Dellavedova a little step up is because his hustle. He's a guy that goes after. He's on the floor constantly, which... Sometimes that little bit of extra scrap puts you over the top on the defensive end much more than it would on the offensive end. Now, a finesse guy like Curry, he could eat that alive.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, he's been eating everybody alive. It doesn't matter who it is. He finds his way to score. He doesn't need the ball in his hand where I'm going to take you to the rack. He can do. He'd be like, you know what? He's up on me. I'm going to go old school. I'm going to go through these screens. I'm going to get wide open. I could be the fourth look. The third look, the second look. He doesn't need that ball in his hand.
Isn't that the beauty of this offense?
Yeah, that's...
I found myself doing this as I've watched Warriors games, yelling at the TV going, how do you let Steph Curry get open? That's not even fair. Because he moves so well without the ball that it's not like the defense isn't trying and they're just, we lost him again. No, it's a concerted effort. They're running plays to get him wide open. Yep. It's just a beautiful thing.
I've talked about that with people and they're like, how do you leave him open? And I'm like, no, watch him get open.
Exactly. There's such a difference between those two things. And it's not discrediting the defense. It's crediting Kerr and that offensive scheme.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like what you're advocating is... a kind of by committee thing.
It's going to be a by committee. And I think it's going to be a lot of rotation. You're going to have to watch him. You're going to have to, these guys, somebody like Curry exploits those pick and rolls so well with his ability to just pull up from, 25 feet out. I mean, he doesn't care. As long as he's over the half court line, sometimes I'm even a little shaky on, I think he may pull up behind that. I mean, he's green light from everywhere.
So speaking of which, by point of comparison, remember I was talking about percentage of two-pointers versus three-pointers attempted? Uh-huh. I don't even care about makes because there's going to be random chance, luck, and all of that involved in it. But your percentages of takes. Remember that starting lineup for the Cavs took 75% of their shots were two-pointers, right?
Yep.
The Warriors, that starting lineup, only 60% of their shot attempts are two-pointers. 40% of their shots are three-pointers. The Cavs, again, the only lineup that starts to resemble that is that all-gunner lineup.
Yeah.
So the fact that they can still size up like that and still shoot 40% of their shots from three is insane.
Well, look at their starting five. Those out of the five you said, Andrew Bogut is the only one who couldn't consistently – everybody else is decently consistent from the three-point line.
So obviously Mozgov guards Bogut.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying Shump out of the gate is on Curry. By committee, obviously, situational dependent as the game progresses, maybe. Yes.
I like it.
So then who does LeBron guard, and how do they break out the Barnes, Green, Thompson matchups then at that
point? That's going to be a tough one for them. I'll jump all the way back to, obviously Mozgov has to guard Bogut, Mozgov. How do you feel about that matchup? Because I think that matchup has a little more enticing than what it looks on paper. It's just a couple of 7-footers banging around. That's what they do. I think Bogut This is kind of where he shot. His ability to pass and step out, such I mean, that passer is... That's something that you don't talk about very much. Mozgov hasn't faced anybody like that.
No, because, I mean, Noah used to be a passer.
Noah was playing... It was half of Noah.
He was hurt. Yeah, and then Horford was hurt and suspended and everything else. But I'd call it virtually a wash, just for the most part. But that's just kind of just going,
I think Bogut offers a lot more on the defensive end. I think, you know, Mozgov is now going to face a center that's kind of, you know, a lot better than anything he's faced in a while.
But there's definitely that matchup. So who's guarding Klay Thompson?
I think LeBron's going to... I think LeBron will probably shade towards Thompson or Draymond Green
most of
the time.
Because then who...
Or no, sorry. Barnes or Thompson.
Okay. I think you've got to hide Kyrie Irving on probably Harrison Barnes. We'll get back to that in a second. So let's say LeBron guards Green, right? Okay. And that means you've put... wait a minute.
You can't
have to have Tristan Thompson on Draymond Green. Starting lineup. You have to have Tristan Thompson on Green. So then,
how are you going to hide Harrison or Kyrie Irving on Harrison Barnes?
Yeah, you can't.
A 6'3 point guard who's already frail.
Well, because the problem is that if you do that, then LeBron is guarding Klay Thompson, so he's going to be hyperactive and very busy on defense. And herein lies the problem.
And that's what, you know, I mean, Barnes is 6'8", 200 plus pounds. Kyrie Irving is injured, 6'3", and 190. And not a big 190. He's a smaller guy. He gets banged around pretty easy. Barnes is a physical player. That's not a hide. And if he's hitting outside, then he's got to play, and you know that Kyrie's got to play some serious defense. And the other thing is Harrison Barnes is a decent rebounder. He gets in there, and he will fly in there, especially if nobody's boxing him out, and nobody's being physical with him. And Kyrie is not a physical player. He's a hit me on the outlet, I'm gone. You know, that kind of thing.
So this is very problematic because Kyrie probably has to guard either Steph or Klay at intervals, or Barnes. Maybe you rotate him around or whatever, right? And then the second most used lineup is just swapping out Harrison Barnes for Iggy, for Andre Iguodala. And that's a 107 offensive rating. The defense has fallen off. They're a 101 defensive rating. But you've still got basically the same problems. If anything, Curry's less of a ball handler at that point because Iggy can play some point if he needs to. But
I want, you know, throw something out there too. Nobody really thinks of is or who he wasn't a big factor last series, but series before. Sean Livingston, when he's out on the court, he's a big point guard that, and not weight wise. I mean, there's nothing to him, but he is about 6'7", 6'8". He can back down anybody.
He's always had a good post-up game.
Yes.
Can I just say,
great post-up
I am
game.
So happy that Sean Livingston has made an NBA career
out
of that horrific injury. When he first came into the league straight out of high school, he was one of my favorite players.
Oh, he was
And then
fun
that
to watch.
Injury was gruesome.
Oh, so this is so nice. Far around, I don't know.
Watching him with the Nets last year was great because he was a key cog on that team, and now obviously he's doing good things with the Warriors. So that is great. He's in the third most used lineup.
He's not a big line. Yeah, but you know, he's a situational guy that you can put in.
Excuse me, it's the fourth most used.
Yeah.
So in their fourth most used lineup, it's Barnes, Curry, Green, Livingston, and Thompson. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Draymond Green is your nominal center at that point. Barnes is the stretch for the uber small lineup. The key with all of these is, and actually that line,
we
that
haven't
lineup,
mentioned Barbosa yet.
Wait,
who
no.
can throw some points up on the
He's
board?
He's in the fifth most used lineup, but that fourth most used lineup. So the one that has Livingston in it, the offensive rating is a 133 in the postseason. Yeah, small sample size. That's great. It's a 90 defensive rating. It's a 43 point difference. This is all I have to say about all these Warriors lineups. They're unbelievable. Like, on cue.
Oh,
I do not understand how you can match up with all of this.
And let's not forget, Azealia is kind of coming on strong.
It's nice to see, yeah.
And David Lee sitting on the bench. Mm-hmm. Who can, at any time, all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, I used to be a all-star. Or an all-star. I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can run this show real quick.
They're very deep. So all this talk about their lineups. They were second overall in the league in offense this year. The Clippers barely edged them out, right? Mm-hmm. Now that's essentially a wash because the Cavs were third overall in offense, right? But the Warriors were number one in shooting percentage. They were number one in true shooting percentage. The difference being the true shooting percentage factors in two-pointers, three-pointers, and foul shots, mm-hmm. right? They were the number one defense. And here's where, on cue, it comes down to that instead of that heaven or hell thing, right?
Playing that?
Yeah, basically. It was queued up. They were the number one defense. They were number one in defensive effective field goal percentage. And they had the fifth lowest opponent's three-point percentage. And oh, by the way, they were first in pace. They played faster than anyone in the league.
They
and
do.
Had the best defense.
It's typically that's, you know, teams predicate that push, that want to get out there and keep that pace up on their defense. They get hyped up, they get this. They're like, let's go, let's run, let's, you know.
Part of my theory to all of this was I don't know how the Cavs can win four times. I'm not saying the Cavs can't win. I'm saying I don't know how they can beat this team four times because they are so unbelievable. And this whole Super Bowl break we've had in between the conference finals and the finals, it's almost started to come across like the Warriors are an underdog here. They don't have the pedigree. They don't have the finals experience and all that, right? They have been this dominant all season. Like, they have not wavered from this. Each lineup, I just don't understand how the matchups work in favor of the Cavs. And then the ultimate is, well, LeBron does LeBron things, but four times?
LeBron can knock 40 points a game, and he still needs... He needs Kyrie Irving to also score 30, and then he needs somebody, a J.R. Smith or, you know, Thompson or Shumpert or Maz. He needs one of those guys to also have a big game because anybody almost anybody they put on the floor, maybe except for Azealia and, you know, David Lee obviously isn't that you know, productive anymore in his minutes, but anybody there can have a great game and can start and could do, you know, could be in there for a full game and the Warriors feel, you know, they could just coast. They can do their thing.
I'd like to throw something out here at this point, too. Our first episode of the Long 2 podcast, mm-hmm. right, we did the whole playoff prediction.
We did.
I'm pretty sure you said... Did you say Warriors-Hawks or Warriors-Cavs?
I think I said...
You definitely had the Warriors.
I had the Warriors, definitely. And I want to say I had Warriors. I thought it was going to be Warriors-Cavs, but okay. I wanted Warriors-Hawks just because I didn't feel the Cavs.
I think you said Warriors-Hawks because I had the Spurs and the Cavs.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? The next time we did a prediction, I think you wound up going Warriors-Cavs.
Mm-hmm.
No, you said Warriors-Wizards because it was two W's.
Yeah,
and I said
that's
Clippers-Cavs.
Right. Yep.
So, you have not wavered from Warriors.
No.
And I've been a complete idiot. I think I was going hipster on the Warriors thing. And at first I said the Spurs. Then I said the Clippers because I kept riding these fads. The truth has been behind those all this time. It's time to just accept it. This was not designed to be a Warriors love fest for a podcast. But they've earned it at this point.
Absolutely.
It's hard not to.
I'll tell you what. I watched... as many Warriors games as I could. And for here, they start, some of those games are like 10:30 tip-offs.
For the East Coast,
and they
could
keep me interested. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm like, oh, I got to go to work. It's 1:30 in the morning, but I'm still watching basketball, you know.
Absolutely.
It, it, I, I was like, there's something special about this team.
Absolutely.
I love Steve Kerr. I think he's a great coach. I thought he was a phenomenal player. I thought he was, for a guy that just, I mean, you look at him physically and you're like, okay, other than being an unbelievable shooter, which there's tons of guys that are just unreal shooters, this guy has to have a tenacity and a basketball IQ that is off the charts.
Absolutely.
And I think you see that, and I think his players feed off of it. You know, Draymond Green, his energy, the way he plays, but yet he's still very much under control. He's not out. He plays chaotic at times, not as much, you know, chaotic where I'm turning the ball over, I'm doing this, or I'm making stupid fouls, but, you know, just very, you know, emotional. You got Klay Thompson, who even playing poorly right now, like, as he is, well, they're say he, you know, stat-wise, he's playing poorly.
Mm-hmm.
I'd still take him over any of the other guards, you know, other than LeBron and Kyrie. I'd take him and start him immediately over anybody on the Cavs. I mean, without a doubt. That includes J.R. Smith, who's somehow figured out basketball while he's been in Cleveland. Because there's nothing to do there at night, I guess. That's what I'm getting, you know.
He's gone on record as saying it. And he doesn't like open shots because they're too easy, which I love. So let me set a little background noise for this.
Let's do it.
And let me get your prediction then.
My prediction. I want the Golden State Warriors to win. I love what Steve Kerr in Golden State has done. Even a little shout out to Mark Jackson, who really helped put this thing together. I think they take it. To be honest, I think they take it in five, no more than six.
That's fair. I was going to say Warriors in five. But let me caveat that with, I don't think that means, so the Warriors won every game in the regular season by an average of 10 points, right? Potentially a blowout. I don't think that's the case. I think most, if not all, of these games are close.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a very entertaining series. I just don't think it's going to be a long series.
I don't think so either. I think it's going to come down to bench play and those tangibles that the Warriors have that the Cavs have but are just not as good as the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the Warriors are just very well put together team. Everybody meshes. No matter which lineup they throw in there, everybody meshes almost identical in game flow, game type. Whereas the Cavs, like you said, they have a gunner team, they have this team, they have this team, they have, you know, it's like, okay. And plus, the Cavs are predicated, their entire series is predicated on people who have been playing better than they've ever played in their entire career. Shooting better, you know, than they have ever done in their career. So, it should be fun, it should be interesting. LeBron's always great to watch. Kyrie, if he's healthy, is amazing. Warriors are just too much.
I can't disagree with you. I'm going Warriors in five.
I'm going five. My heart says five, but knowing LeBron, it's gonna he may give them an extra game. I think it at most six. This doesn't go to seven.
I'd be surprised. But I'm still going to watch every game because it's going to be really entertaining.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
Let's talk about a few odds and ends real quick. How do you feel about... So game one's Thursday night.
Yeah.
I think game two isn't what till Sunday night?
Sunday, 8 p.m.
How do you feel about the three-day break in between?
I think it serves both teams well. I think it's horrible for us as the fan.
I'd rather, personally, I'd prefer just every other day.
I would too. Every other day. Even every two.
Once you move to the major media outlet, ABC versus ESPN, not that ESPN's not a major media outlet, but as a regular channel, you start to play into the Sunday versus Saturday type stuff, whatever. I'd prefer every other day in general. How do you feel about the announcers? So now we get Breen, Van Gundy, and Jackson for the whole series. What's your take on that?
Okay, Mark Jackson, I got to give him props for, you know, he's a good announcer and decent, and he never says anything. You never sense any bitterness about this Warriors franchise.
If it is, there's like levels of it, and you've got to really read into it.
Yeah, you really got to read into it, but I'm sure he goes home and he curses everybody out. you know, this is my team. This is what I do.
It can't be easy. I mean, you're 1 year removed.
No, it can't be out or easy. You're right.
I tweeted this the other day, and I stand by it. Van Gundy's
fun sometimes. I want Barkley back in there. I love Barkley.
Selfishly, I enjoy Jeff Van Gundy so much as an announcer. I hope he doesn't coach.
Me too.
Because I don't always agree with him, but I love how candid he is. I think he's the perfect color commentator, especially when him and Breen are going at it, because I love Mike Breen, especially because he calls Knicks games. So on League Pass, I'm always watching the Knicks broadcast, and it's normally Breen and Walt Clyde Frazier. But Van Gundy and Breen, I think it's a great matchup. So that's a good pairing. I think it's a good situation. It should be entertaining.
No Marv.
You got any other... You got any other parting shots, words of wisdom, anything else you want to talk about?
No, not from that side. What do you think about the coaches?
Well,
coach hirings.
Alvin Gentry. Hey, I called
it. Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, I'm going to claim no credit for that prediction because at the same time, what did I had Patrick Ewing going to the Magic.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
I will still cape. They went
totally different position.
I will still cape for Patrick Ewing going forward. As a kid, I had a picture of Shaq getting a post pass from Scott Skiles with Patrick Ewing guarding him.
There you go.
So I feel like indirectly that's all related.
There you go.
So, no, anyway. So Scott Skiles as the Magic coach, I mean, do Why you not? Think how many years away are the Magic from making the playoffs, if at all?
I lean more towards the if at all. I think they're 2 to 3, 2 to 5.
I say 2 seasons. In the East, the way it is right now, I think next year they're right on the verge, and then the year after they're like an 8 seed.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That's a good one. Yeah.
Having no idea who they draft and what they do with Tobias Harris, but regardless.
What about the Bulls?
The Bulls. So the foregone conclusion, right? I'm excited for Foyberg, really?
Foyberg.
We're getting to that point where I can't make sentences, so we have to wrap this up soon. I'm excited for the Hoiberg administration to begin. So I read some of the quotes from his press conference. It sounds like he's going to give more opportunities to some of the young guys. So Tony Snell, Mirotić, Dougie McBuckets. Those guys are going to get some more opportunities
I'll be happy to see him out there.
It sounds like they're going to be playing at a little better pace. The offense might be a little more fluid, a little different. And it sounds like they're going to adhere to what's kind of become a league norm when it comes to minutes. You know, and I mean, as a Bulls fan, you probably got to be, it's probably going to be a little bittersweet, but maybe a little bit of relief that
I'm excited
guys that have been so often injured might start to get the rest that they need.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good thing.
I'm excited for them. I think they need to. A change of pace, kind of you put it, is going to be much needed. I think they got some talent sitting there. I think they're ready to go. I love what he did in the NC2. Two-way, he was a great coach. He took that team and did some good things.
I've got a little bit of a hot take. I don't think any of those coaching decisions matter as much as what the Thunder just did this week. Monty Williams was hired as an assistant coach. I love this move. Monty Williams might have needed to leave the Pelicans. I don't know all the dynamics there in terms of, you know, was he the right fit? I know Anthony Davis, based on reports, really liked him. Like, he built a really strong rapport with him. Him being an assistant coach on the Thunder, I think that's going to be huge.
I think
that's going to be really big. Because you've got a guy that's been in the pro game as a player and as a coach, as an assistant and a head coach now, for a long time.
Yeah. Right?
Billy Donovan has about this much NBA experience. Touche. That was a big zero for everyone listening. All 7 of you. So, I think that's a good pairing. And that's a smart move of... surround yourself with guys with pro experience like that. So
I love it.
I'm looking forward to see what the Thunder can do now. I was down on the idea of the college coach coming in to change things. I feel a little better about it now. Monty Williams doesn't get enough credit.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll definitely see how that plays out. It's going to be interesting. You know, Billy Donovan has a good offensive set. You know, he stresses some physical defense, so we'll see how they take. If not, KD to DC, right?
No, we're not starting.
Come
that
on,
we're 49 minutes in. No, we can't start that conversation right now.
Man,
we were
right
by the way,
there.
Do you know why I'm so opposed to this ever exceeding an hour? Because I listen to a fair amount of podcasts, a lot of other people that have been doing this for a long time that I respect the hell out of. When I look at a podcast and I'm about to hit play on it, when it's only two digits, it's so much easier to stomach. As soon as it hits three digits, it's daunting. It's like an investment that I'm not ready to make. It might only be an hour and 1 minute, but the fact that it's an hour plus, as a listener, I feel like, wow, this is a serious investment in time right now. I don't know if I'm ready to embark on this. If it's 59, I'm like, oh, cool, it's less than an hour. I'm good to go. I hit play. So I promise you, the listener, that we'll always keep it under an hour.
We will always be under 60
minutes. Including if we're in the middle of a topic, I'm just going to
stop it.
Yeah,
yep. It's
just
going to
happen.
Yep.
So be prepared.
And but, we're done.
I can't think of anything else. I mean, I think we covered it. It should be a good finals, though.
I'm excited.
We will meet back up at some point during these finals and start to break down this further, right?
Absolutely.
See where we're at. Maybe some irrational conclusions.
Yeah. Hey, we may have to play with our time for the podcast next week. Let's see. We got a game Thursday, Sunday, and then what is it? Tuesday? And maybe a Tuesday. I think maybe we should go for another Wednesday after that.
You might have to
really break these finals down.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, we did it again. A lot more
music
than normal.
I liked it.
Hey, thanks for listening. Again, you can check this out as well as all the great articles that Nylon Calculus produces on nyloncalculus.com. I'm on Twitter at @hoop_nerd. That's hoop nerd. Steve is
at
Twitter
on
Twitter.
It's my summer chore list.
Mm-hmm. You know what my summer chore is? I'm going to redesign the logo for the podcast.
Yes!
Right now it's just Jay Smooth. We're going to make ourselves a real logo.
Thank you, because he had a horrible series.
No, that was just a temporary, it's kind of a temporary placeholder. And every time I see it, it reminds me it's time for a new logo. So, all right, thanks for listening.
Thank
you. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the finals.
Enjoy.
All right.